Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Ursula Runberg.
Our guest for today is Jerry Keyes of the Story County Conservation Board, talking with us about how to have fun in the winter in Iowa, in our public areas, from cross-country skiing to skijoring to trout fishing.
Thank you, Jerry, for being with us this morning.
Oh, it's great to be here.
I'm so excited that you could come because for 30 years I've been a happy participant in cross-country skiing. We started cross-country skiing when we did because our winters in those days were really lots of snow. And we thought, how can we get through these winters? We have to find something enjoyable to do. And we started cross-country skiing, and it's changed our view of Iowa.
It is great. It's a great way to get outside and enjoy the winter. It gets you off the couch, and you meet some interesting people out there on the trails.
Yes, you do, but not very many. That's one of the nice things. No mosquitoes and not a lot of crowds.
I would agree with that.
The reason that I called you was because I know that you have some cross-country skiing out at McFarland Park by the Story County Conservation Center, but I believe there's a lot more around Story County that we really don't know anything about.
Yeah, that's right. Before we actually talk about cross-country skiing, I want to explain a little bit about the different types of cross-country skiing that is available. When most people think of cross-country skiing, they think of classic, which is a traditional style of putting one foot in front of the other. It's the easiest to learn, the hardest to master, and it works in lots of conditions. Think of the Nordic track. If you go to the gym and do the Nordic track, that is traditional cross-country skiing. Skate skiing is the other type. It's more like roller skating, where you're pushing off to the sides. The skis are shorter. However, it requires hard-packed, groomed trails, and it doesn't work just to go in a new fallen snow. You need that packed surface. Because of a limited snow and trail selection here in Iowa, most skiing is done in the classic style. And that's what you'll find out at our parks. Out at Story County Conservation, all of our areas, we allow cross-country skiing. However, we don't groom trails. So you need to go out, either be the first one out there and work a little harder, or you wait a day for the gung-ho people to get out there and actually lay some track for you.
Yes, that works pretty well. Mm-hmm. I would like to say one thing, though, about skate skiing. I think it's pretty hard to learn. I couldn't do it. It takes a lot of energy. It's for mm-hmm. a real athletic person. But late in the season, or I should say later between snows, when the traditional tracks are not easy to use, you can still ski on the skate ski tracks.
Right.
Also, though, it's really demoralizing to have those people fly past you when you're going along.
That's for sure. I've been up to Minnesota, up in Ely, and yeah, you're doing the traditional in the track, just going along, and yes, some skate skier come flying by you. they can go much faster. But getting back to the groomed trails, like I said, Story County doesn't groom trails. There's a lot involved with that. You have to have some type of snow machine in order to pull the grooming, which is basically a sled that pulls behind the snowmobile, which packs the surface, and then usually creates tracks for the ski to stay in, mm-hmm. Which helps keep your ski straight. There are some places in Ames, though, that do. It is my understanding that Carr Woods and the Ames River Valley Park area, they do groom trails there. Outside of Ames, but I believe still in your listening area,
right.
Are some groomed trails. Polk County Conservation Board grooms trails at Jester Park and Chechaqua Bottom Greenbelt. They usually wait until there's about 4 to 6 inches of snow before they groom. Big Creek State Park, they have a group there of local skiers that groom an area, so there's groomed trails there. And Boone River Rec Trail and Briggs Woods up in Webster City, to my understanding, is also groomed trails.
Why would anyone go without groomed trails?
Without groomed trails is actually one of my favorite. I love it. I love going out and breaking my own trail. It's more difficult and it's more tiring, but it's that adventure of going somewhere where no one has gone before. You're going along through fresh, fallen snow, and you have animal tracks that you come across. I've seen places where owls have came down or other raptors have came down and picked up rodents because you can see their wing beats in the snow. And if that were a hard-packed, groomed surface, you would miss all that signs of stuff going on in the wintertime. And that's what I love about the ungroomed trails.
What keeps people warm when they're cross-country skiing? I know people think, why would you want to get out when it's 10 degrees above zero? Or
the best thing to remember when you're cross-country skiing is that when you first get out there, it's going to be cold. So you're going to put clothes on because you're going to think, ooh, it's cold outside. But as you get going, your blood's going and you start warming up. So when you cross-country ski, it's important to wear wicking-type clothes, and also dress in many layers. When I start out, I've got on insulated long underwear. I've got some fleece pants for warmth and windbreaking pants on outside of that.
You said wicking type clothes?
Probably propylene, nylon. For women, they call them cuddle duds, that type of material. The old cotton long underwear that they used to use years ago keeps you warm, but once it gets wet, it quits working. So all this new nylon-based stuff actually pulls moisture away from your skin, which helps keep you warmer. But it's important, that, as I was getting to, is that make sure you have it in layers. So you, as you get hot, moisture starts to build up. You may want to take off that wind-breaking layer to let some of that moisture out. A lot of zip-up clothes. You know, I've got glove liners and then heavier gloves when I start off. By the time I'm done, I'm pretty much down to just the thin glove liners just to help let the moisture out.
I always found that that was the problem, was being too hot when you were skiing. Of course, you do start to sweat, so you don't want to stop. But as long as you're moving, you're plenty warm. And that was one of the things that I originally liked about it. It's a way to get out in this beautiful, and there's nothing as pretty as a new fallen snow. It's just, and I skied in a lot of beautiful places, and Iowa is just as lovely as any place else with a new snow. It's just a gorgeous way to be out. And you can be out, and you can move in it, and you can be comfortable, as long as you don't have the wind in your face, but then you can wear a scarf. But you're right, you know, you have to have enough gloves at the right time, but you have to have a good place to stick them when your hands start to sweat.
Oh, yeah, I usually got a little backpack on that I can take stuff off and put in there, and I've got my water bag on, so make sure. And that's another thing, you know, with any type of exercise, just as if you're indoors with the gym, you want to make sure you drink a lot of fluid. To drink a lot of water so you have that available.
I have another question. One of the things that I was thinking about as I did this program was I have skied in a lot of different places besides Iowa. I skied in Europe and I skied in New Mexico and California. And the snow is beautiful there, but it's better to ski in Iowa, and the reason is the snow quality. And I wanted to ask you a little about why that would be.
Yeah, most of my skiing has been in the Midwest, in Iowa, or up in Minnesota. But from what I understand, because of our cold weather, the snow, it's icy, it's not moist. When you get in the warm weather, that snow gets wet and it gets sticky. And it's a totally different situation because that snow builds up on the skis. Weather like we have right now where it's super cold is actually some of the greatest cross-country skiing because you don't have to worry about that buildup. If you go late in the season when it starts to get warm outside in the upper 30s and stuff, which is probably what you would experience in New Mexico and California, places like that, that snow gets wet. And so that wet, sticky snow builds up, just like it builds up underneath your car when you're driving down the road. You know, on a day like today, it doesn't build up. But if it gets warm, you get all that slush build up. Well, that slush builds up on those skis.
It's nice to have a sport that makes you enjoy the what everybody else thinks is the worst of the weather.
Well, and one thing about it that we didn't really mention when we were talking about getting hot, you can go as fast as you want, and you can go as slow as you want. You can work as hard as you want, or you can relax as much as you want. So you actually can control how hot and sweaty you get or how big a workout you want. Some days when I go out, I'm out there to just get a good workout, and I really got the heart pumping. There's some days I go out there, I'm just putzing along, and I don't get hot because I'm out more looking in the woods than I am skiing.
Yeah.
Do you see a lot of wildlife when you're skiing?
Yeah, I do. And a lot of it's because the places I choose, you know, I like to get in the back parts of the park where there's not a lot of people. I mean, we have other people enjoying the wintertime also in the park. Snowshoeing is becoming very, very popular. But with the skis, you can get a lot further quicker, so you can kind of get in those back areas away from everybody else. And it's not so much the actual wildlife, but it's the signs of the wildlife, the stuff they leave behind, the tips of the branches that are chewed off by the deer, or the bark on the rose stems that are nibbled on by the rabbits, or the footprints from the squirrels coming down one tree across the ground and up the other tree.
Well, what about other winter sports? I'm sure people always think of sledding. What else is there?
Well, yeah, there is sledding. As I mentioned already, snowshoeing is becoming very popular, and lots of people like to snowshoe in our county areas. Snowshoeing, people usually think of having deeper snow for that to actually get the benefit of the snowshoes. Snowmobiling is still popular. A lot of people get into that. We do allow that on our Heart of Iowa Nature Trail, which is a southern trail across Story County through Slater, Huxley, Cambridge. We do allow snowmobiling there. We have the Prairie Rail Trail, which is Roland to Zeering, which is also available. And then on Hickory Grove Park, actually on the lake ice, you can run snowmobiles there. As well as Story County has other trails. We don't manage them. The Snowmobile Club does through road ditches and stuff throughout the county. And one of my favorite ones, ice fishing. I love to go ice fishing. There's just something about sitting out on the ice, staring through a hole, catching a bunch of fish.
Well, one of the sports that you didn't mention that was pretty big when my children were growing up was ice skating. Now, what's happened to that? Does everybody just go to the rink now?
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. It seems to be that way. But we do have some people that come out to McFarland Park that bring shovels, and they will just scoop an area off on the lake and create their own little ice skating rink. So all you really need is an area of flat ice, and you can pretty much ice skate on any of the lakes as long as there's enough safe ice there.
So that's allowed to
people? Yeah, that is allowed also. Matter of fact, I actually live down by Jester Park, Mile Long Bridge outside of Polk City. There's been a group of three kids that have been there a couple nights a week where there's a little pond there, and they've cleared themselves a little hockey ring, and they're down there in the evenings when I'm coming home from work practicing their ice hockey skills. in the middle of a wilderness area, wildlife area, I should say, these kids have created their own little hockey ring all for themselves.
That's very nice.
You mentioned another sport I'd never heard about that is like dog sledding, or what is that called?
Skijoring. It's something my wife and I actually stumbled on 2 years ago. We didn't know it had a name. We just started doing it because we had golden retrievers, and we wanted to take them with us when we were skiing. But in a public area, dogs have to be on a leash when they're in a park. And so we found out there's a sport called skijoring where you use a dog sled harness on the dog, which is a pulling harness. You don't want to use just a regular collar. It has to be a specific pulling type harness. And then we have about a 12-foot lead, it's called, that connects the dog to us. And then we have a body harness that we wear that goes around us. And there's a little section of bungee cord so the dog doesn't jerk you when it takes off. And our dogs are trained to know that when they're hooked up to this system, their job is to pull and to stay in the ski track, and the dogs pull us. So it's like dog sledding, but you're on skis. It takes a lot of the work away from you, and it's great exercise for the dogs. Couple of things to remember when you buy a system. You have to make sure it's got a quick release, so in case the dog does want to go somewhere that you don't want to go, you can release yourself from the dog so that when it sees a squirrel and goes into the timber, you don't continue into the timber with the dog. Learned that one the hard way.
Is this on the cross-country ski track?
Usually what my wife and I do, they really don't like people to skijore. The people that groom trails really don't want you to skijore on their groom trails, and I wouldn't want to because the dogs do leave footprints in there. Mm-hmm. So we have places that my wife and I go out and we will make our own trail one day. We'll break trail, lay a track, and then when we go back and use it, then we can take our dogs with us.
So how did you train your dogs to do this?
Well, my wife and I show dogs for a hobby, and so we do a lot of obedience training. And it's really trial and error. Our dogs are taught to leave us and go out. It's a command that we have. And then we have commands for turning left and right, G and Ha, which are dog sled terms. Mm-hmm. G means turn right, Ha means turn left. And then, of course, you have your standard woe. And it's just working in the backyard on a lead, walking with them and teaching them these commands.
Do the dogs like doing it?
They love it. They see the harness, they see the skis, and they get all excited. Yeah, because it's an opportunity for them to get out and enjoy the outdoors, too.
That's really great. Do other people do this around here?
They're actually, around here, we run into a few people, not as many, but up north, they actually have races where people do this competitively. And we usually just have one dog per person, maybe two. But I've seen websites where these people have whole teams of dogs, like six dogs pulling them. I can't imagine how fast they can go with that.
So two dogs, you go faster than one.
Yeah.
Is that right? So do you, when you do this, do you get comments? I mean, are people amazed to see this?
Yeah, they really are. And then when you tell them it actually has a name, skijoring, then they're like, oh, really? I mean, like I said, when we first did it, we just tied a rope around us and went out with our dogs and then realized, okay, this wasn't working. There were some safety issues involved. And then we found out about the whole skijoring harness system and quick release system, which makes it a lot more fun because it's a lot safer.
It sounds like sitcom material. That's so great. I've never heard of that. That's really interesting.
Well, if people are inspired and they'd like to try it, where can they rent skis?
That's a good question. Here in the Ames area, Skunk River Cycles rents skis, as well as Jack's Outdoors. The ISU Rec Services, if you have an ISU card, they rent skis. Outside of the Ames area, Polk County Conservation Board and Jester Park rent skis. They're just open Monday through Friday, so you have to rent them on Friday for the weekend. And then Marshall County Conservation at their Grimes Farm Conservation Center also rent skis out to people.
And I believe from a program that we had last week, they also rent them out at Don Williams.
Oh, okay. Don Williams also rents them out? Okay, I was unaware of that.
I think
Thank you.
Could you also tell us where someone can go to find out where the different trails are? Could you give us some websites where those trails are given out?
That's funny you should ask that, because I always like to prepare when I do these interviews. So I was out doing some looking yesterday, and Skunk River Cycles, if you actually go to their website, they actually have a link to Iowa Ski Trail webpage that has a list of all the groomed trails in Iowa.
We can get that on our website when we put our program on. I think that we shouldn't leave this topic without talking about safety, because mm-hmm. there are some safety issues. Could you outline what they are?
Yeah, I do want to mention one of the things that we talked about earlier on the phone. You talked about skiing on rivers and creek bottoms, so I'd kind of like to start with that one. One thing to keep in mind, in Iowa, waterways are public. So if you were to ski on the Skunk River, the water is public, but the ground under the river is private property. So you can ski on a river as long as you're skiing on the ice. If the stream bed is dry and you're actually skiing on the earth, the dirt, then you're technically on private property and should have permission to be there. And, you know, you mentioned earlier when we were talking on the phone that one of the benefits of skiing in the Crickson Rivers is that sometimes the snow stays there longer than up flat, which is true, and it's good. The downside of skiing on water is, or a river, is that you're skiing on ice. And ice over moving water can be very uneven. You may have 4 inches in one spot and an inch in another. And if there's snow on top of that, you can't tell how thick the ice is. So you really have to be cautious when you're skiing on ice that is over moving water, such as in rivers and streams and stuff like that. Regardless of whether you're on the ice or out in a park, just with any outdoor activity, it's always important to let someone know where you're going, let someone know how long you're going to be there and when you are planning to return. So if something happens and you don't make it back, they know where to come looking for you. You know, whether you had car trouble or maybe you did sprain a muscle or something, and you're sitting out in the woods, if you didn't tell someone where you were going to be go skiing, they don't know where to start looking for you. So it's always a good idea to have a plan, let someone know that plan and stick with that plan.
And it's a good idea to have your cell phone with you if you have
yes.
one. Well, I guess our last question is, are there opportunities for a cup of coffee or a sandwich at any of these places?
A lot of the communities have small coffee shops, and we encourage you that if you're out enjoying one of our county areas to visit those local businesses and support those businesses that are in that local community. And another thing, too, a lot of people always ask about is restrooms in the wintertime. Most of our county areas, not all of them, but most of them have either vault latrines or porta-potties there.
Everything's taken care of.
Why don't you talk a little bit about ice fishing?
Yeah, we've had lots of people at our parks ice fishing lately. Just so you know, the ice thickness right now at Hickory Grove and McFarland Park is about 10 to 11 inches, where typically they say 4 inches is enough to hold a person. When you get up to the 10-inch range, that's actually enough. You can drive a small vehicle on the ice. So the ice is what I would consider safe to go out on, although there's no such thing as safe ice. You always need to be checking the ice conditions and looking at the quality of the ice. But right now we have very high quality thick ice.
Because it's been so cold out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, we just had an ice fishing program on public program on Monday. Had people come out to the park in the cold weather. Not a lot of people came out for it because of the cold weather, but enough to keep it fun. And one of the comments that people made was the ice was constantly popping, making noise. That's actually an indication, in my opinion, of good ice, because ice makes noise when it's forming because it's expanding. And as it expands, it cracks and pops. When ice is deteriorating and shrinking, it doesn't make noise. So quiet ice bothers me. So getting back to what you're saying about ice fishing. So we have great quality ice. It's forming right now. It's a good time to be out. The thing I love about ice fishing is that if you like to fish, you don't need a boat to ice fish. You can go anywhere on the lake. It's actually can be a very cheap sport. A hand auger for $75. Buy what's called a schoolie rod for about $15. And you're set. Now, you can buy fish finders and all this fancy equipment to maybe help you, but it's not necessary. When you go out ice fishing, too, the fish have a tendency to school in the wintertime. So if you can find the fish, you usually have a great opportunity to catch a lot of fish in a short time if they're biting.
Describe how you do ice fishing.
Yeah. First thing I do, especially if I go to a new lake, if I was new to it, first thing I do is look to see where everybody else is fishing. Find out where the people that have been fishing there have drilled their holes, so that's a place to start. Usually you want to, because they usually know where the structure is in the lake, and that's where the fish will hold, is near submerged vegetation, rock piles or brush piles. And then heading out on the ice, you want to make sure you check the thickness to make sure it's safe. Like I said, at least 4 inches. And then you go out and you drill a hole with a hand auger or a power auger. And holes are typically 4 to 8 inches round. And then it's a matter of, with your ice pole, you have a tiny little jig on it called a teardrop jig, or there's lots of different styles, but a small hook. And then you put your bait on it, a wax worm, and you want to fish near the bottom because that's the warmest part of the lake, and that's where the fish hang out. So for very basics, what I do, I have a little clip-on weight that I put on the jig, and I lower it all the way down to the bottom. And then the schoolie rod has a pin that you put in to mark where the bottom is. And then I reel it up and take that weight off and then lower the jig back down with a little wax worm, which is a little moth larva on there. And then you just sit and wait for the fish to bite.
Now, how do you get the hole in the ice?
You drill it with an auger that you hand turn. It's a big drill. That's another way to look at
it. And how big is the hole usually?
Most augers are 4 inches, 6 inches, or 8 inches, depending on the species. Your fish up north, they might use even bigger 12-inch augers. But in Iowa, where you're primarily fishing for panfish, bluegill, bass, crappie, 4 to 6 inches hole is a big enough diameter.
And now you sit inside a little house.
A lot of people do have portable ice shacks that they pull out. I don't like to use an ice shack because, like with my cross-country skiing that I talked about earlier, I'm out there to enjoy all of nature. And when you're sitting in an ice house, yes, it's warm and it's comfortable, but you're staring at the walls of the ice house. I want to be out there on the ice. I've had deer come across the lake. I've had coyotes. I've seen eagles flying over, and also other ice anglers out there that you go over and talk to. If you want to be left alone, an ice shack is great. If you want to see what's around you and communicate with people, they can be a barrier.
And you stay warm enough?
I do. I dress for it. I know how to dress, again, in layers, the same things we talked about with the cross-country skiing, mm-hmm. Really bulky clothes. Another thing I like to do is I like to have visible clothing, so in case something would happen, again, someone can find me. Other things to keep in mind when we're talking about ice thickness and safety, I usually have some type of flotation device with me. I have a throw rope with me in my little utility sled that I pull with me. And then I have what are called ice picks that hang around my neck, which are basically just grips that you can hold on to that have little points sticking out of them. So if something were to happen and I were to fall through the ice, I can use those to pull myself out.
Well, thank you. That's great. I've actually never spoken with a nice fisherman, so it's great to hear how it's actually done.
It's another way to enjoy the winter.
Well, there's one sport that I don't know whether we have anybody here who knows anything about it, but it's ice boating. Do you know about ice boating?
I have never ice boated. I've seen some videos of it, but never did it myself.
Well, I know that they used to do ice boating over on Little Wall Lake. This is many years ago, and in fact, I have a really incredible story. I think I can tell it without using the names, but my husband did go ice boating, and he said, we're sailors, and he said, it's terrifying because you get very, very fast, much faster than you can go in a sailboat, and there'll be open places on the lake, but you still sail over the cracks, and so he told about a friend of his who got a phone call in the middle of the night. And the circumstances behind the call was there was an ice boater who had had an accident such that his helmet was frozen on. And he got over to a farmhouse, and they let him in, and they turned on the oven, you know, so he could get his head in to get this thawed off. And when he got it thawed off, he said, I've got to call X person and tell him not to go ice boating tonight. It's a true story. I know they ice boat up at Clear Lake, but I don't know whether they ice boat any of the other lakes or whether anybody goes out to Little Wall Lake anymore.
That would be allowed on our lakes, yes.
But you've never seen it.
No, I've never seen it, no.
So which winter sport do you like best?
What winter sports do I like? I really do like the cross-country skiing and the skijoring that I mentioned with the dogs, and then ice fishing. I really like to ice fish. It's not only the fishing, but it's the providing. Catching some fish caught through the ice is so much better than fish caught through the summer because it's so much the meat is so much firmer because it comes out of cool water and it lays on the ice there. It doesn't get warm.
So you mentioned earlier that ice fishing is done where other people are ice fishing.
Mm-hmm.
Do ice fishermen mind sharing the ice?
No, they don't. They really, it is kind of a community of people get together. I've never really ran into anybody that was like, oh, you know, wanted to be off on their own. And I should mention too, talk about ice fishing. One of the things that Ames, is lucky enough to have is, the Iowa Department of Natural Resources has started what's called Urban Trout Fishing Program. And so, in the winter months, they find, lakes, in urban areas that aren't in traditional trout stream areas, which is northeast Iowa, and they'll stock trout. And Ada Hayden, here in Ames, is one of the places that they've chosen. And for the last couple of years, they've put trout in there. They did one stocking, I believe, in November, where they put trout in through the open water. And it is a put-and-take fisheries. These fish are all at the size that you would want to keep them and take them home and eat them. And now that it's frozen, there's still trout in there from their stocking. And I was on their website this week, and it looks like they are scheduled to stock again on February 8th, Saturday, February 8th. And so they'll be putting more trout in there. And so you'll probably see, if you've been out at Ada Hayden, maybe skiing on their trails or snowshoeing or walking, you've maybe seen one or two ice anglers out there. Probably on February 8th, that thing's going to look like a whole town of ice anglers out there trying to catch the trout that are put in.
Well, that's wonderful. And if by chance somebody does not know where Ada Hayden Park is, can you describe where it is?
just go north out of Ames on Highway 69 on the way to Gilbert, and it's right there on the west side there. Mm-hmm. Big, wonderful. That is actually managed by the city of Ames. That is a city park. It's not a county park, although we were involved with some of the original planting of the native prairie and maintenance of it, but it is a city-managed area.
So what is one of your most memorable winter sports?
It is the skijoring. It's a funny story we were talking about with skijoring. I had kind of hinted that one of the things we learned is you need to have a quick release system on. My wife and I and a friend of ours, we were out one night, decided to do a night ski on a full moon. Absolutely beautiful night. And we're out skiing and we're going along, and all of a sudden we could see something up ahead cutting across the trail. And the dog saw this, whatever it was. And my dog just decided, forget about skiing, I want to go chase it. And so I thought, okay, I'm just going to try and slow the dog down. And that didn't work. The dog started dragging me. And I could see there was a culvert underneath the road grade. And whatever this thing was heading for it. And my dog is trying to intersect it at this culvert. And so I tried to lay down to try and stop my dog.
Oh, wow.
But it kept dragging me to the point where I finally did have to use a quick release. It ended up being a possum. And what happened is the possum made it just to the culvert about the same time the dog did. And the possum did what possums do, and that it passed out. And
oh, wow.
They say play dead. It's really not a choice they have. When their adrenaline gets up, they do pass out. And then they actually secrete this nasty smell. It mimics that they're dead. And my dog got to it. My dog was like, oh, it's dead. It's not moving. And luckily, it didn't turn into anything bad. No one got hurt. But I thought for a minute there I was going to be tangled up between a possum and a dog. So that was kind of the most memorable one. We've had some situations, too. As much as we train our dogs to ignore other things, we have had instances with deer that go across, and then they like to go in the timber after the deer. But usually I can get them stopped.
Well, that's a great story to end on. Thank you so much for coming and expanding our knowledge and probably your repertoire of winter activities.
Well, thanks for having me. We'll have to do this again for some summer activities or spring activities.
Absolutely.
Maybe during the morel mushroom season in the spring, I can come back and we can talk about mushroom hunting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but a lot of people won't want to have any secrets given away on that one, right?
Oh, I don't give away secrets. I just give help. And again, if you want to learn about other winter activities or keep up on what Story County is doing, if I may say our website again, Story County Conservation.org, or you can find us on Facebook. We put a lot of our stuff on there, and our office number is 232-2516. If I can mention one program coming up, we do have a monthly program called OWLS, Older, Wiser, Livelier Seniors. It's the first Tuesday of every month. So January's will be next Tuesday the 7th. And our presenter that day is Ty Smedes, a wildlife photographer from the Des Moines area. And mm-hmm. he will be presenting his slideshow on loons. He spends a lot of time up north photographing loons. And so if you want to come learn about loons, Tuesday at 11 o'clock at McFarland Park. The program's at 11 with an optional luncheon at noon.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Your hosts have been Susan Franzen and Ursula Rudenberg. Today we have heard from Jerry Keyes.
Can you just describe for a minute before you go the organization you work with?
Story County Conservation Board. Our offices are out at McFarland Park. We manage all the county parks in Story County, as well as provide educational programmings in schools and for the public.
That's great. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.